I'm Matchmaker Maria, the founder of Agape Match. For over a decade, I've combined four generations of family matchmaking tradition with modern relationship psychology, behavioral science, and dating trends. With this unique expertise, I answer your dating and relationship questions and interview experts to give you the tools to find or keep the love of your life. This is Ask a Matchmaker. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast. I'm your host, Matchmaker Maria. Before we introduce our next guest, I've got some housekeeping items. There's a lot of things happening on the Agape Match team. So when you have a moment, check out the links in the show notes. Do you want to join my database and be set up with one of my current clients? Do you want to join me in my upcoming Eurovision party on May 11th in New York City? I've got some other events coming along that I'm currently in the process of organizing. I think one of them is a boat party, which I'm thinking about making it a friend of a friend party. So if I do this, here's what's required of you. If you sign up for this party that I plan to have on a boat, you would have to invite a friend with you. So you can only buy two tickets at a time. And the friend that you invite has to be a member of the opposite sex. This way we can kind of even out the ratios and it could be a lot of fun. So that's what I'm thinking about also hosting in the coming weeks. I'm also thinking about hosting another like immersive art experience. So last week I hosted this event at Unorthodox. It was incredible. We sculpted heads blindfolded for an hour. We couldn't talk, which if you know me and if you follow this podcast, you know that that was extremely difficult. I don't know when to shut up. But I did it. I did it for a whole hour. They put music really loud. Some of the songs that were in that immersive experience included soundtrack music from The Last of the Mohicans, which is always great. And also the song Sadorini by Yanni, which is one of my favorite songs by that composer. So it was a really fun experience. I think my head turned out really cool. You could check it out probably on my Instagram. I've probably posted photos of this experience by the time this podcast episode comes out. What other housekeeping items? Oh yeah, Agape Intensive. We have virtual dates out for April and May. So if you want to join us, by all means, please check out the show notes. Link is there. And I think that's it. There's a lot more other things happening. Show notes, it's all there. But I now want to welcome this week's episode guest, CPA Janine Rogan. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited that you're here. I pictured you'd look different.
I just got bangs.
So. I think that's what it is. I was like, Janine looks like this. And then she shows up looking beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I was like, you look so different. And you were like, it's the bangs.
It is the bangs. They're very new, but I'm loving them.
Do you feel like you have like a whole new personality?
Definitely. Totally. It's a completely different Janine.
It's a different Janine.
Yeah.
Do you ever think to yourself, like, how did I not get bangs before? Because they look good on you.
Thank you. Yeah. A couple of people have said that. I think there's always so much like tension around bangs, which is such a silly thing because hair grows. But,
right.
You know, I think people will get bangs when they're like in a crisis. And I was not in a crisis at all. I'd been thinking about them for a while. So I think I'll keep them.
Like, I feel like I had bangs when I was in college and it only looked good this one time for this one week. I have a photo from that one day. And that is the photo that I, whenever I post a photo of me and my college best friend, Moshula, that's the photo I always post. I'm like, look how beautiful my bangs are. Like she's the third character in the photo.
I love it. I think you definitely, my stylist showed me how to easily style them, which was key. And then I think you have to really keep up on like trimming them because sometimes they can go like very, very long. So
before we get into this week's topics, because we have a lot to talk about. So I didn't mention at the start, I should have said this. Janine is the author of the book, The Pink Tax. It came out last year. Fantastic book. So excited to talk to her about finances and dating and the pink tax. But before we do that, we have to talk about this week's news.
Yeah. Kate Middleton.
Where
is she?
Where is she? Where is our girl?
I truly have no idea. I'm Canadian, so.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So are you getting new money with King? Like, there's so many layers to this conversation. So let's start with the first one. Queen Elizabeth died a couple years ago.
Yep. She passed. She was quite old.
Yes. King Charles, Are we getting money in Canada with his face on it?
My understanding is they like started the process, but now they're pausing it because I think he was diagnosed with cancer. So they're like, maybe he won't be here for that long. And then it would go to William.
Do you think, have you been following what's been going on with Kate Middleton?
A little bit, mainly kind of on TikTok, and just everyone is really concerned with like what kind of illness she has.
So if you don't know, Kate Middleton was last seen at the end of December after their holiday party. Then apparently there was like a convoy of cars that took her to a hospital.
Oh, dear.
She was not seen. She has not been seen since. A car was never recorded leaving with her from the hospital. And then the information bits that have come out in this process have been a little obscure. Like, for instance, they had said something about how, like, the kids didn't visit her for the 2 weeks she was in the hospital because they didn't want their schedule to change, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, that's odd.
Because we're not even in COVID protocol anymore. No. So, like, there's no, like, why wouldn't your kids visit their mom?
Yeah. And she was, like, after she's given birth to her children, like, she's out in the public eye, like, in heels.
Within like a couple hours.
Yeah. Which like I gave birth and there was no way that was happening.
Oh yeah. I remember after giving birth to my first kid, granted I had an emergency C-section with my first. I remember being angry. I mean, I actually wrote this as an Instagram post once on International C-Section Day, which is a holiday.
Okay.
I think it's on April 30th. I remember being angry at Kate Middleton 2 days after I gave birth to my son, because I was like, she's making it seem like it's so easy. Meanwhile, I was like, I cannot function. There's like 7 layers of stitches. Yeah. How am I supposed to do this? Like,
my midwife was like, I only want to see you horizontal for the first 2 weeks. Like, do not, like, you can come downstairs like once a day and that's it. Like, there was no way I was doing my makeup, my hair putting on makeup, heels. The heels kill me.
Like, we would have never judged her. She could have come out in a wheelchair and been like, brava.
Right?
You know? But she did that with all 3 kids. And I was like, wow.
She must be like very unwell if that's the case.
I feel like we have been conditioned as the viewing public that like, wow, like that was, childbirth is traumatic.
Yes.
You managed to come out hair and makeup. And now, you know, something serious has happened. And it's funny because when they said in January, she won't be doing public events until after Easter, I don't care. I'm Greek American. The monarchy doesn't mean anything to me. I let it, like, I was just like, cool, Easter. Yeah. Like, I didn't even think about it until last week when that Mother's Day photo came out.
Yeah, that I think has like kind of stirred the pot a lot.
When you saw that photo, what were you thinking?
I think I started kind of going back to like what had happened previously, like with her appearances, and trying to figure out like, oh, it's been a while since we've seen her. And I don't think I understood how long, like I know when Easter is, but it feels like a long time since seeing her. So I guess my first thought was like, is she okay?
When the first photo was published, I remember the first thing I did, I remember my thoughts, which was one, wow. Like I remember putting my hands down and was like, is this how, like, is this, can I do this? Like, I remember thinking that because her hands look kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then the second thought I thought was like, wow, all 3 kids are looking into the camera smiling. Bravo. Like, I remember thinking, like, I wonder what the cameraman is doing to get everyone's attention at once and laughing. Like, my kids are, I only have 2 kids and they're like,
I only have 1 and I can't get them to look at the camera.
Right. So to have all 3, like everyone just, and then the third thing I remember doing, I actually like did this on the photo, zoomed into her stomach. So I was like, wow, she's wearing like skinny jeans and hiking boots. Like what kind of shirt is she wearing? Because if this is abdominal surgery, because that's what we've been told, she had a planned emergency, which how could it be both abdominal surgery?
Oh.
And I was like kind of zooming in. I was like, you couldn't see. It was so dark. It was like, I remember thinking this photo is edited on how dark the stomach is. Like they've darkened this bit so you can't really see like.
So trying to hide something.
Something. And then that was it. I like just kind of. And then the AP assigns a kill notice later that day about the photo has been manipulated.
Oh, interesting. I didn't read that part.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. And that was the big, that's when it all blew up.
Yeah.
And okay. Then I remember thinking like, well, how is this different than like Photoshop? Like, you know, what's different? Why is this getting a kill notice? And apparently like when you, I think when you like lower the saturation or brighten the highlight or something like that, you see there's like lines. Like you can see that there's like a copy paste of different photos together.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, TikTok detectives are real.
So real.
So they were just kind of going through a tune. And, you know, you see other inconsistencies like, you know, Charlotte's sleeve is like double tracked. It kind of looked like AI.
Yeah.
It kind of looked like here are the three. Here's my photo and three photos of my kids. Dear Adobe or whatever the name
paste
is.
Paste them together.
Paste them together yeah. and make me a wonderful smiling photo of us looking into the camera, which is kind of brilliant, by the way.
Yeah.
Right? The problem is that you're not me. You're a royal.
Totally.
And you've given a photo of yourself that's not real, but you're pretending it's real. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, so that all happens. Yeah. And the next day, the princess, puts out a statement saying, like most amateur photographers, I was just playing with Photoshop.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
I don't buy it. Like, I just can't picture someone. I mean, you've given birth.
Yeah. That's the last thing on your mind after you've been in the hospital.
I don't know if anything more traumatic has ever happened to you.
No, that's probably the most traumatic
thing. Right. So just imagine like the most traumatic thing that's happened to you where you cannot see people. Yeah, you're on Adobe.
Yeah, no.
Maybe she was on Canva.
Oh, God.
That's what it is.
There is some like weird AI tools that will give you like a third arm or something.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. And all I could think was like, there's a few thoughts I had to this, which was the first was like, why? Why? Yeah. Like, why is this happening? Also, no one is expecting a photo of you on Mother's Day. Especially right. if you're sick, you could have just, your husband could have just put a photo of you playing with your kids from 5 months ago.
Totally.
Nobody would have cared. Like, oh, okay, she's resting. Look at this sweet photo of them. Like, I mean, people literally have jobs and professions taking photo of you and your kids. There's a million photos you could choose from.
Yeah.
Just pick a real one and just be like, Happy Mother's Day. Like, I didn't do a photo shoot with my kids on Mother's Day last year. My husband
You don't even need to post anything if you don't want to. Like, you don't owe anyone a post.
Right. She could even, I was telling my sister this, like, she could have put a photo of a flower pot that just said, Happy Mother's Day.
Totally.
Like, it doesn't even have to be about you. It could just be about moms.
Yeah. Or her mom. I'm not sure what her relationship is like with her mom, but.
It seems like something more serious has happened. And now I'm trying to figure out, like, my brain is starting to think about, like, why.
Yeah, why the, like, layers of lies almost.
Yeah. Do you have any, as a Canadian, as part of the Commonwealth?
Yes, we're still part of the Commonwealth.
I feel like this affects you more than me, but part of me thinks, like, if it's really serious in the sense of there's multiple versions of seriousness, right? There could be health serious. And like I said, hey, you said until after Easter, I'll patiently wait until after Easter, Catholic Easter, American Easter, whatever you want to call it, not Greek Easter, which is May 5th.
Yeah.
But also, there's, like, the more serious of, like, oh, are they getting divorced? Something happened, you know? And if that's the case, I have been wondering, like, oh, is this when Canada and Australia are going to reject the Commonwealth? Like, part of me feels like, and this is from an American perspective, like, non-monarchy Commonwealth related, part of me wonders, can the monarchy exist without Kate Middleton as queen? Because I feel like the people that are really, really, really pro monarchy, they really became Team Kate the last few years.
Yeah. Especially with everything with Meghan.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So to take Kate away now from the crown.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like
I almost wonder if it's like a Diana thing again, right? Where Diana was more beloved than kind Charles. Of everybody else.
Yeah.
And they kind of pushed her out. And maybe that's happening with Kate. I mean, everyone loved Meghan and kind of look what happened.
I mean, I still love Meghan.
Of course, yes.
Right?
She's wonderful.
But I do wonder how does, yeah. I don't know. I hope by the time this episode comes out, we are recording the Thursday before this episode comes out. So like five days before, I am really hoping that by next Tuesday, there is just a photo of Kate, no makeup, no, your hair in a ponytail.
Yeah.
Just like be chill, be human for a second with holding a newspaper.
Like with the date. Yeah.
With a date. Like
I'm alive. I'm
or
good.
You know what? You know, if you're watching this, princess, pop on a Zoom with Piers Morgan.
Right.
And just be like, hey, I'm alive.
Yeah.
He'll be more than happy to take your call. I'm sure of it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Or you can just call me.
Yeah. I'm sure you'd take her call too.
I would take her call. I will literally Zoom in my producer. We can like just get it all done here.
Yeah, it is very interesting to watch some of these developments.
My biggest pet peeve this week, though, has been people who are like, oh, my God, who cares? And I'm like, well, wait a second. I care.
Yeah.
Like, it's always like when people talk about like Taylor Swift or Kate Middleton or whatever, Reese Tisa, like anything that like I'm enjoying, I'm like, don't say who cares. I care.
Like, Reese Tisa, like that was on playing for like 2 days straight. Like right. I was very invested in
that. I had a whole episode about her.
Yeah.
Like I was just like, let's talk about this. So I feel like, you know, not only that, but Kate Middleton does represent a massive part of British fashion.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Like she's literally carrying it on her shoulders.
For sure. I mean, just look at like sapphire engagement rings with like the diamonds around. I didn't even
Although I have a sapphire because not because of her. My mom has a sapphire.
Right. Yeah.
And also
But it became really popular.
But it did become popular.
Yeah.
Team Sapphire. Live it. So anyway, so that's what I want to say about Kate Middleton. I can't wait. What do you think is gonna happen? What are your conclusions? I mean, you're Canadian.
Yeah.
Do you think that there will be a monarchy without Kate Middleton?
I think you'll have a lot of people that aren't happy with it. So I don't know if Canada or Australia will ever leave the Commonwealth.
What do they get out of it?
I don't know. We don't get a ton, but...
But you get something?
I guess we have money with, like, their faces on it. I don't... Not really. No.
You don't...
There's not really a...
Like, is there, like an economic community? Like, do you get, like, less tariffs or taxes or...
You know, I actually don't know. They're not part of NAFTA, so...
Do you, if you go to the UK, do you still need a visa, like, to work there?
Yeah.
What the hell's the point of this?
I think it's just, like, history at this point. Like, they're just figureheads, honestly.
Yeah, but you have, like, famous Canadians like Ryan Reynolds that you could put on your money.
Right.
Or Ryan Gosling. Really, like, I would totally go to Canada as a tourist to use Ryan money.
Seriously.
Like, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Reynolds. We can add Jim Carrey in here. Justin Bieber. What other famous Canadians do we have?
Celine Dion. I would definitely like to see her face on some money.
On a toonie?
Yeah. Oh, you know what a toonie is. Fantastic.
I do know what a toonie is. I actually really love Canadian money, and you should look up how Canadian money is made. You could wash it. You could literally put it in
plastic,
a washing machine.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And you have the, what's called, the patent or like the monopoly in this like specific
Oh, tree. I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, it's, like, very specific as to how your money is made. I love Canadian money. But I would love it more if it had Ryan and Celine's face on it.
Seriously, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we should petition.
We government. Should petition. So, listen, here's the deal. If Kate Middleton is not queen, this is our opportunity to get the Goslings and the Reynolds and the Dion's faces on money.
100%. I'm into it.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about... Other money. What a perfect transition.
Right?
Holy
I was
smokes.
Like, did you plan that?
I did not plan that. I literally deserve a trophy. So I'm really proud of myself right now. I am so happy to welcome you to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast to talk about money.
Yeah.
So you wrote this book called The Pink Tax.
Yeah.
Super popular last year. It's still popular.
Yes.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. So I started writing it actually when I was 8 months pregnant, because that's like a very Janine thing to do. And it was the pandemic. And
sure.
I don't know what I was thinking, but it came out last year, and I always say it's my second baby that doesn't give me any attitude. But I really was at the point where I've been in the personal finance space for so long, about 14 years at this point. And what I was really finding was so often the conversations around money for women were like, just like, don't buy expensive shoes and lattes, and avocado toast is why you can't buy a house. And I was like, that can't be it. Like, if that was it, I feel like women would have figured it out. And so that's really what led me down the path of researching for the book. Like, what actually impacts women's abilities to build wealth? And how do we look at starting to close the wealth gap? And so at first I was like, is it two books? Is it one book? And then it just kind of all came together. So there's, you know, practical money advice, but there's also a lot of conversation around what we can do in our lives, in our companies, and as global citizens to help make the world more fair and more economically equal.
Tell me more about the history that you're writing about in your book, right? You mentioned in your book about the inequality mm-hmm. that exists. Where does that stem from historically?
It definitely stems from the patriarchy. And the fact that women really didn't have the ability to have their own bank accounts until the 60s, and they couldn't have their own credit cards until the 70s. And I think that has perpetuated women not having conversations around money.
1960s, 1970s. I don't want people to be confused here.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
The centuries, right? Because they might say, oh, 1860, that's fine. It's like, no, hold up.
So you needed a father or a spouse to...
Like my parents were 20.
My parents were alive too. I'm like, sorry, mom.
But my dad was 21 years old by the way. At the time. Yeah. That's when women.
So it's not even really been one generation of women being able to have those things.
Right.
And so I think it's no wonder women don't talk about money as much as male counterparts. I mean, I worked for a tech company back in the day, and I'd walk into a room of guys and they're all talking about like what investments they made and, you know, this cryptocurrency and the stock market. And I just never was in rooms where women were talking about those things. And I found it really interesting. And I think part of it does stem from this. And then I think part of it also stems from the fact that women are told that they're greedy if they want money. But if they marry a man who has money, then they're a gold digger. So it's like, we can't win with all these stereotypes. So we may as well just kind of throw that all out and try and make as much money as possible and close the wealth gap.
What do you think, when you were writing your book, what were the things that were kind of like aha moments for you?
You know, the first quote in my book is Gloria Steinem, the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. And I think there were so many moments where I was like, oh my gosh, this is so like unjust and so frustrating. But then
like
also,
what?
I think even just the wealth gap, white women have just 30% of the worldwide wealth and women of color have just 2%. Like, wow. I'm like, this is insane. But then looking at countries in Europe usually for amazing examples of how we support women through policy, through maternity and parental leave. I know, like, you live in the US, I live in Canada, but you guys have what, 6 weeks of maternity leave?
We don't have any, actually. There's nothing that's mandated.
Oh, wow. That's...
It varies from state to state, but we don't have a federal...
But, you know, we were just talking about giving birth. Like, I cannot imagine going back to work after, like, 2 weeks.
Most women go back at 6 weeks.
That's insane.
Because there's not a lot of support. Like, what if you're... First of all, for you to go back to work at 6 weeks, you also have to win the lottery.
Yeah.
Of having...
The easiest birth ever.
Yeah, easiest birth ever, but also a child with no...
Challenges,
yeah. And any obstacles to take you back into the workforce. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I see how certain people, they'll like scoff at like pumping rooms. And I'm like, you know, you can't.
Yeah, like how are you feeding your child?
And then I was listening to, let's call him, he has a podcast. I'm not going to say his name, but he has a podcast where he gives like financial advice.
I know who you're talking about.
And he was scoffing recently about, you know, parents paying $25,000 a year for childcare. And I was like, yeah. Like, he's like, just stay home. And I'm like, whoa, like, what do you mean? Or like, you know, your parents can do it for free or whatever. And I'm like, you come from a very different generation.
Right.
I
don't have grandparents like for my kid in the same city I live in.
Right.
That's not an option for a lot of people. And we know that like women leaving the workforce is very impactful to their earning potential. And we also know that women leaving the workforce continues to create economic inequality. And it's bad for men too. Like, I talk a lot about like from the women's perspective, but men who are like close and have a relationship with their child have lower rates of suicide.
Yeah, we actually had this incredible guest on the podcast back in October, Mark Green, where he talked about how getting the paternity leave, getting to touch their child, you know, being able to cuddle them in the first weeks of life, how there is a direct correlation between that experience and having a lower rate of despair deaths. Mm-hmm. And I had another guest talk about how, well, was it a guest or did I read it in a book? A lot of what we see is an impact from actually the Industrial Revolution. So prior to the Industrial Revolution, men and women were, you know, mostly in agricultural communities, which meant that, you know, that man probably spent time with his children picking corn, you know,
having conversations,
whatever. And then once the Industrial Revolution began, the social design of society, it changed. It was engineered to like, okay, you men are going to commute to work to the closest city, to this factory, and the women are going to care for the children. And then that divide begins where children are no longer speaking to their fathers. Fathers are having an increases in alcoholism, despair deaths, you know, what have you. And that is because we're not connected, you know, as I think what sets us apart as humans, as a species, is our necessity to connect with each other.
And our ability to do so.
Right.
I mean, most people can remember how isolating parts of COVID were.
Right.
And
especially if you lived alone.
Yeah. Like people were literally matching on like Tinder or dating apps to try and find someone to quarantine with.
Right.
Because as a species, we need connection. And so connecting with your children, having a relationship with your children, regardless of what parent you are, is so crucially important. And I think like, it also, when we look at like women staying home, that's fine if as a society we actually place economic value on it. Because right now we don't, right? We believe that women should stay home and they aren't compensated for it in any way.
It's interesting that we're saying this right now because I feel like there's two things happening at this moment while we're recording. So on one hand, you know, you mentioned TikTok before, but there is this hashtag trad wife. Momentum starting, which is there are creators online who are participating in what is called trad wife, so traditional wife, which is, you know, they show homemaking from a very warped lens, in my opinion. Not all creators, but some creators, where it's like, I'm not showing you the nanny taking care of my kids right now. I'm not telling you that this oven behind me is $8,000.
Right.
So you have this conversation happening at trad wives. And then you also have like the ultimate trad wife, Kate Middleton, who has disappeared.
Yeah.
Right. And I was listening to a divorce attorney who's like, I don't really care about trad wives in their 20s. I really care about them when they turn 40 and suddenly there's a divorce happening and they have no money in their account.
No ability to earn an income.
And also, a man can use her inability to create an income against her to gain custody. So if a man doesn't want to pay for alimony or child support, especially child support, he can tell, and this has happened, right? Like this is evidenced in hundreds of court cases where a man will go into court and he'll say something like, she hasn't had a job in 20 years. She's unable to make an income. She's struggling and therefore I should get full custody. Because I'm a responsible person, I have discipline, I have the income.
Yeah, that's like a form of financial abuse.
It's purely financial abuse.
Yeah.
And that's not fair because also if you have decided to stay home with your children, which by the way, that's a really hard job. I personally could not do it.
Oh my gosh. There is research to support that if a man, I'll use like a traditional household, was to actually pay for some different people to do all of the things that a stay-at-home mom, it's like $180,000 a year.
Right.
Cooking, cleaning, driving, psychologists, you know,
house
booking
management.
Appointments.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that goes back to my point about as a society, we've chosen that this work doesn't have economic value.
Right. But he may have... The man who might have a wife at home, being a stay-at-home mom, he having that freedom of not having to worry about all those things.
Yeah.
He might have also actually gotten further in his career.
Oh, 100%.
Because of that. Like, if you don't have to worry about like oh, my kid is sick and I have to leave today, or I have to leave for this recital, or I don't have to.
When does school end and why is it 3:30? Because I don't know about you, but my workday doesn't end at 3:30. So who's
going to go get the kid?
Exactly. Yeah, it is very complex. And, you know, that's kind of what I found in my research for the book, is it's just so multifaceted and there are so many layers to all of this. And we have to start talking about it because, to your point, you never go into a relationship thinking that divorce or death of a spouse is going to happen, but 50% of marriages end in divorce. And I have talked to so many women who just were completely blindsided financially on top of, you know, all of that grief that you're going through from the relationship ending. And I don't wish that on anybody. And I think,
especially if you're a stay-at-home mom and you're so used to having your kids around you, and now the court system's you get to see them 2 days a week and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Like that is a form of grief.
I mean, absolutely. That's grief. Not only are you now grieving your relationship, it's also time with your children. Like I'm here in New York and my little one is at home and I'm here for 6 days and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's day three and I miss him so much. Yeah. And it's good to take time away from your kids, all of that stuff. But I can't imagine only seeing him 2 days a week.
Right. That's really rough.
Yeah.
When you say that there's lots of layers, what layers, what are some of the layers that you were uncovering in the research of your book?
Yeah. So when we take a look at the wealth gap, and I mentioned before, that's the difference in wealth accumulated between men and women. And we know that any level of intersectionality just makes it worse. So if you're a person of color, if you're part of the LGBTQ2S+ community, if you're disabled, those kind of add layers onto the wealth gap being even wider. But when we actually uncover what creates the wealth gap, it really starts with the wage gap. So women are paid less than men. I know there's probably people in my TikTok comments section always arguing that that's not true, but we know from the data that there is a wage gap. And then women have less money, and then we're hit with traditionally what's called the pink tax, which is the pricing disparity between men's and women's products. So walk into a CVS, a Walgreens, and razors, the pink branded one, is more expensive. The shampoo for women is either more expensive, or if it's the same price, it has less volume, so smaller ounces. And that leads us kind of to be hit twice, right? We make less, we have to spend more, so we have less money to put away and invest and build our wealth. And then we know women live longer than our male counterparts. We're living on average about 3 to 5 years longer, so we need more money put away. And, you know, as I was uncovering this research, it was so frustrating that this is kind of how we've set up our society, or that companies can kind of get away with paying women less for the same work, or, as we've talked about, not placing value on work that is traditionally done by women, whether that's unpaid labor or, you know, teachers and nurses are predominantly women in the workforce. And I would argue that they're paid quite substantially less than work of similar value. So you might say another frontline worker might be like firemen or police officers. They're always, at least where I live, seems to be budget to increase their salaries, but there's never budget for teachers and nurses.
Right. And I think there was a time when those professions were male oriented.
Yes.
Where if we took into account like inflation, all that stuff, that they were paid more once.
Yeah. We actually see in the research that lower wages follow professions where women are kind of the majority. So the original software engineers were actually women of color. Have you seen the movie Hidden Figures?
Yes.
Yeah. So those were the original software coders. And it was a job that, you know, wasn't very well respected and they didn't pay them very much. But now who are our software engineers? Typically white dudes in Silicon Valley.
And they're fairly white, but yeah.
Yeah, but they're paid quite well and very well respected.
It seems like everybody wants a computer science degree right now.
Yeah, absolutely. But the same is true for teachers in the opposite way. It was men about 100 years ago. Now it's women. And we're actually seeing the same thing happen in pediatrics. More women are going into pediatrics and they're the lowest paid doctors.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Do you, when you were doing your research, was there any comparative research to like countries like Finland, I'll take a few extremes like Finland, Afghanistan, Greece, Saudi Arabia, Spain. Like what were you?
Yeah. Seeing? So I tried to look at as many countries as possible. And we know that some of those like northern Scandinavian countries, Finland, Sweden, Iceland, they have kind of some of the smallest wage gaps. But we also know that they have some of the most supportive parental policies. So they have policies that are 480 days of parental leave for either spouse. And
could they split it? Or
you can use actually the days up until your child is eight. So if there's something like a pandemic and you need to take a month off to teach your six-year-old at home, you can just take that out of your parental leave. And there's policies also around if you don't split it with your spouse, you actually lose days.
What does that mean?
So if your husband did not take at least 90 days, let's say, of the leave, it's kind of use it or lose it in terms of those paid parental days for the family.
There's father protections as well.
Yes, hearing. Absolutely. So they want both parents to take leave, and that makes sense, right? A kid has two parents. Both should absolutely be involved. And usually there's some healing and biological reasons that mom takes the first, or the birthing parent takes the first portion of the leave. But again, we want more equality. We want men to understand what we're going through as parents. As you know, parental leave is, it's not a vacation, as you know, right? Some days on Saturdays and Sundays, I'm like, is it Monday yet? Is daycare open?
Sunday night, I'm like,
woohoo, it's Monday.
Yeah. Once the kids go to bed.
Absolutely.
Do you find that, like, do you think, you know how they say, like, Finland is, like, the happiest country? Mm-hmm. Do you think that's contributing to their happiness index?
I think so. Absolutely. I think having, you know, men involved in the family is so important. I also think they don't have a culture where they obsess as much as we do in the West around work. I think people probably work less there and spend more time with their families. To your point, connecting with people they care about. And I think that really does help them increase their happiness. But I also think there are social security kind of safety nets in place so that if something does happen, like maybe whatever is happening to Kate Middleton, who knows, you have the ability to take leave and not worry about being able to feed your kids or keep a roof over your house.
Did you get any comparative statistics from other countries outside the Scandinavian bloc?
Yeah, so some of the Middle Eastern countries have some of the biggest wage gaps, predominantly because women in those countries don't often work. But I would say, and don't have as many rights as maybe women in other places. But there is also, I can't remember the names of some of the African countries where they have set policies into place to ensure that there's a certain number of women on corporate boards.
Wow.
In those countries. And I was really shocked and impressed by that.
Do you, how do you come, I don't know how it is in Canada, I'm sure it might be the same as it is in the US, but right now there are more women currently enrolled in college
mm-hmm.
than men.
Yeah,
and
it's the same in Canada.
I see this as a matchmaker, right? A lot of the people that I've matched or people that I give advice to, and maybe probably the predominant majority of the listeners of this podcast, they might feel more comfortable participating in essentially like women marry up, so to speak, right? They are going to marry someone who's more educated. They'll have a higher income. They'll have a higher power standing. But if more women are currently enrolled in college, which funny enough, I have noticed that the moment the numbers started showing over the last 10 years that more women are currently enrolled in college, suddenly a lot of men have been using their platforms to say that college is not as important.
That's interesting.
And I'm like, what? You know, like, for instance, Gary Vaynerchuk. Do you know who that is?
I don't know.
He's a man with a massive platform.
Okay.
He's started a few companies, but like he's very known for like, you know, I think his parents used to have like a wine store and he went, took that digital and it's like a big media company okay. now.
Yeah.
But he also gives people like a lot of advice and it's kind of like hustle culture advice. And I have seen him say stuff like the money that you have set aside for your kid, you know, instead invest in their startup. Like you have set aside for your kid to go to college because in the United States, college is not free.
No.
You know, put that money aside for their startup. And I'm kind of like, okay, but not everyone needs a startup.
No, right? And not every startup is successful.
And not every startup is successful. And also, like, as someone who does have a master's degree, I will tell you that, like, going to school, like, furthering your education in this way,
yeah,
it does teach you certain skills. And a lot of those skills are maybe critical thinking skills 100%. Or communicating. And I'm not saying that if you don't go to college, you don't have strong critical thinking skills. Don't misunderstand. It's just a different way of thinking.
Absolutely.
A different way of looking for primary sources. And it's funny because I know this, because the reason why, like, I think in this country, we have a lot of conservatives who are like anti-college, because they're like, they say stuff like, you know, the kids go to college and they become more liberal. And it's like, do they become more liberal, or does college force you to figure out what a primary sources, and when you can't find a primary source that says that, you know, women belong in the kitchen or, you know,
yeah,
all XYZ is bad, does that make you more educated, and does that being more educated make you more liberal or more progressive? Like, which is it? You know,
we do know that more educated people tend to be more liberal. Obviously there's outliers, but I think that kind of
I think it has to do with your ability to your critical thinking skills.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I 100% agree. Education is never wasted, in my opinion.
Right. And so there is, ever since, like, I mean, even John Berger, he wrote this book called Datanomics, I want to say like 8 years ago. And it already showed, like, okay, in a lot of college and universities, there's more female enrollment. And also at the same time, I'm hearing men say, you don't need a college education. Like, hold on.
Yeah. So my grandma was one of the first women to attend the University of Saskatchewan in her program. And she actually out-earned my grandfather at the beginning of her working life and his. And I think she's not with us anymore, but I think she would be so disappointed to hear that, like, that you don't need a college education, because that's what gave her the ability to be financially independent. And so I also wonder if there's a piece in there that it's like control, right?
I mean, I think it goes back to, like, you know, we said how now more women are teachers and nurses than, you know, in the beginning of these professions.
Yep.
And how men downplay them. And it's the same thing now. Oh, more women are in college. Let's downplay college.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating because these women now have to marry one day. And now you're going to have, there is a place, John Berger came up with this term called mixed collared dating. So if you are in a white collar job, especially a woman, the math ain't mathing. You might have to marry, or, you know, you might have to start opening up your dating prospects to people that are blue collar, which personally I think is fine.
Yeah.
I don't think someone's profession is their full identity.
It shouldn't be.
Right. But I do think that as women, we have been socialized by the patriarchy to look up to our husbands.
Yeah.
Instead of as partners, as collaborative partners. Absolutely.
It needs to be equal partnership. And I mean, I've said this before and my husband has said this, like, you do have to be really conscious of who you're deciding to do life with.
Yeah.
And I think your values have to be in alignment. And I think that when it comes to money, those conversations have to be had. That, you know, one person, because I've also heard, like, I have friends even where they earn more than their partner, and that bothers their partner.
It bothers their partner.
Yeah, it bothers the man.
I've always felt like if it bothers a man that a woman out earns him, I think that it's very easy to point to money and say, this bothers me. But if it wasn't money, it would have been looks. It would have been their education. Yeah. It would have been their family.
I'm like, go to therapy. Like,
yeah.
Seriously.
No, but like I there are more men than there are more men who are more than happy to date a woman that out earns them.
Yeah.
Than there are men who that bothers.
Totally. Right?
But it's never about the money, in my view.
No.
Because I have been in instances where, like, I've been in crappy relationships. I've also seen crappy relationships at work. Yeah. And I was like, okay, so then when he started out earning you, then what happened? Well, then it's something else.
It's like the job that you hate and you just feel like, oh, if I only made more money, I'd be happy. And then you get the raise and you're still unhappy, right? It's the exact same thing.
I was like, maybe he just doesn't like you. And you know what? There's a lot of straight men who do not like women.
Yeah.
I think they like fucking women. I don't think they like women. And those are two very different things.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I think maybe some of that insecurity might stem from like misogyny.
Yes. And we know misogyny hurts men too, right? It doesn't just hurt women.
Yeah.
It hurts men too. And they maybe feel like they can't act a certain way or go into a role that they really want. Or maybe they want to be the stay-at-home parent and they feel like they can't have that conversation because it's traditionally kind of women's work.
We had a caller call in last week where it seemed like she, you know, her boyfriend and possibly soon to be fiance, he was participating in a minimalist lifestyle.
Okay.
He was working on a home that he's like, he lives in a home that he owns and he collects rent payments from two people.
Okay.
I believe. And he's also currently building a tiny home.
Okay.
And he's going to rent that out as well. And she just seemed upset that he didn't have like loftier ambition. And, you know, now that it's been a week since that episode came out, part of me is like thinking like, was it that, or are you also maybe resentful that he doesn't have a 9-to-5? Because that's valid too. You know, I'm not trying to take away from women what we have been socialized to believe and what we should be getting from this relationship.
Yeah, I think you don't have to want to be a multimillionaire to have a happy life. And we know the research supports that. So I would probably say like, again, is it the money or is the money kind of masking what the actual issue is? Like maybe he is really, really passionate about building these tiny homes. I obviously don't know him. And maybe she's feeling that he doesn't pay enough attention to her, doesn't care about what she's doing, or doesn't, maybe they don't share interests. I don't know, but I would say that if you're living a comfortable life and you have enough money, is it the money then? Like, or is it the 9-to-5? Is it that wanting more? But I also, you know, I ask this to people often because, you know, I worked in a firm, I worked at a tech company. So I feel like I can outwork a lot of people, but that doesn't make you happier. So I would really take a critical look at what
makes you happy.
Yeah. What makes you happy and what is enough? What is satisfaction, right?
This is literally, that's my Roman Empire. I literally think all day, how much is enough? Like there are people that I
know. I don't know the answer to that question.
Right, everyone's different.
Yeah.
But like I know some people where I'm like, I know someone personally who's like a billionaire, multi-billionaire. And the way they talk about taxes.
And I'm like, don't even get me started.
And I'm like, but you're a billionaire. What do you mean? Like you're still, if after you get taxed, you're still a billionaire.
Yeah, I don't think like, billionaires like, should exist.
So. Right, okay. So there's one take. But I remember saying this to him. I was like, but after you get taxed, you're still a billionaire.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, but I'm like, okay, but you've already created your education trusts for your kids. Your children have trusts. Okay, we've moved on. You know, like, what else do you need this money for? Like, how much is enough?
Yeah. And I would argue that there's probably other areas of that person's life that they are not feeling satisfaction in. And again, they're focusing just on the money because there are so many areas, right, that give you life satisfaction. It's not just money. And yes, money makes life easier, for sure. And we don't want people...
Some money makes life easier.
Yeah, we don't want people, you know, not being able to make ends meet. That's a completely different
conversation. That's a different conversation, yeah.
This is on, like, the other side of the spectrum. So... you know, when will you be satisfied?
Right now, President Biden is proposing a 25% tax on billionaire income.
Love it.
Which would be actually...
I think it should be higher.
I think that's actually equivalent to like the tax rate for like receptionists.
Yeah, there are so many tax loopholes for the ultra wealthy. And I'm talking billionaires. Like people don't understand how much $1 billion is.
No.
It is extreme. It is an ungodly amount of wealth.
I think like don't quote me on this, but I think like a billion seconds is like 11 days. No, excuse me. A million seconds is 11 days, but a billion seconds is like 37 years or something.
Yeah, it's insane. Like the magnitude between the two is just absolutely nuts. And you know what? If you want to be a millionaire, that's fine. Most of us aren't going to be billionaires though. There's very few people that are billionaires. And I always argue like, how did you become a billionaire? Like what systems and things did you get to take advantage of that allowed you to build wealth in that way? And so, you know, my opinion on billionaires is they should not exist. I think once you hit 999 million, and I can't take credit for this, I saw a tweet on years ago, but we give you a trophy that says you won capitalism and name a dog park after you, and everything else goes to education and healthcare.
I love that. love that. I've seen that and I love that. So, so since we were talking about like men and women, do you think men who are dating now have issues like by and large with women making more than them?
I have not been in the dating pool for a very long time. I met my husband before any of the apps and stuff like that. But I think sometimes men will say that it doesn't bother them. But then when it actually comes into practice, I think it does bother them. And I think sometimes that's because of the power dynamic shift. They might feel like because she's earning more, she should be able to maybe make more decisions with the money or...
I actually don't think that's it.
No?
No, I think if a woman makes enough... So, okay, the men that it bothers,
yeah,
I think they come into a relationship thinking like, well, I'm bringing in the money. But if
so
she
I don't
has,
have to do anything else?
Right. Okay. But if she has her own money, then you need to...
be a decent human.
Exactly. You need to compensate with being emotionally available. You need to compensate by being physically available, being generous with your time,
doing
being emotionally healthy.
Yeah,
doing all their stuff. And it's like a woman doesn't need you. She needs you to be her partner.
Yeah.
But she doesn't need you. And I think some men really struggle with that.
Yeah. I think we've let men get away with just maybe bringing in the money. And I say we, I mean like society for so long.
Post-industrial revolution, for sure. Like, I think that there's a lot there. It's funny. Have you read the book Catching Fire? It came out like in 2009.
No, I haven't.
You should.
Okay.
Everyone listening to this Catching is going to read Catching Fire this weekend. You can audible it. It's like, I think it's like 9 chapters. It's nothing.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe it's 9 hours. I forget which one. But essentially that's what Catching Fire talks about too, is like how the relationship dynamics, I think it's specifically chapter 6, where it's like, it talks about relationship dynamics between people in early humans when there was more, if a society, like if certain tribes or societies needed more hunting by the men versus less hunting.
Interesting.
So like the relationship dynamics in those places. Like, for instance, I actually just wrote about this in my book, where in Nepal right now, there are, for thousands of years, women, because there's not enough land to go around.
Okay.
Instead of everyone having like 2 kids or like creating some one child policy or whatever, what their society has deemed appropriate is for a woman, when she marries a man, to also marry his brothers. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's polyandry society.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because, okay, now this woman, she's married, let's say 3 brothers. She's also going to have like maybe 2 kids.
Okay.
Right. So you're not, it's not each brother's having. So now it's like replaced by 2 kids. Whereas if these men had married 3 separate women, it would have been two kids. So it's like 2 kids versus 6 kids.
Mm.
But we still have the same amount of land. Like Nepal does not have that much land going around. And as a result, the society is a very peaceful society.
Interesting.
And I find that really, I also think about this a lot. I think about this a lot, maybe because I just wrote about it, but also because like, it really does flip polygamy on its head. Like, you know, polygamy is the practice where a man marries multiple women.
Yeah.
Right.
And this is the opposite.
But isn't it interesting how in that society, in polygamy, where you have one man, where you could be thinking like, you know, like, right now we are doing some construction in our home.
Okay.
And my husband bought by accident, the wrong doorknob for our closet. It had like a lock on it.
Mm.
And I said to the contractor, I said, we need a different knob because I don't want one of my kids accidentally locking the other kid in a closet.
Fair.
Right? So
or locking themselves in the closet.
Which the contractor agreed with, right? But he called my husband to let him know, like, hey, stop by Home Depot and get another knob. And he told them, you know, and then my husband, who has never called me this before, but he goes, whatever the boss says. And I'm like, but anyway, but that made me think about how I mean, it's fine. I'm not upset by it. I thought those were kind of funny actually, but it made me think about how, like, I wonder anytime I've seen depictions of polygamy where a man has married multiple women, it doesn't seem like the women are the bosses. It seems like that guy is the boss.
Oh, for sure.
And like, there's all these women, even though in this scenario, I'm the boss. Right. It's like that Greek saying, like, the man is the head, but the woman is the neck, and she gets to turn the head.
Yeah.
Right. And I thought to myself, like, well, I wonder how it is in polyandry, because like now you have one woman with like 3 men or 3 men just bullying this woman around, or is she the boss?
Yeah.
So it made me want to think about this, like, you know, kind of research a little more, and I'll have to probably get back to you.
I want to know. I really, I'm like, I need to go to Nepal.
But I don't know. I've been watching like documentaries about this, and it makes sense to me.
Hey, fair.
You know, do you think, you know, you're a millennial, it seems.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you think millennials are facing, I mean, I feel like they are, but I'd love to hear your take on it. Vastly different financial experiences than their parents.
Absolutely. I think in so many areas. So post-secondary costs have gone up insanely
in high. College, you mean?
Yeah. So college, oh, yeah, university. Like I,
yeah, yeah,
so
sure.
I use this as an example, and it was actually in my TEDx talk, but my mom and I went to the same, we're about 30 years apart. So we went to the same university, we graduated with the same degree, and we actually ended up working at the same accounting firm.
Wow.
So really great data point when comparing things. So her university tuition was like $1,000 a year. And I compare that to her starting salary, which was $18,000 a year. My starting salary was $41,000 a year. And my post-secondary costs were $8,000 a year. So we see just in that small example, the starting salary has basically doubled, but post-secondary has eight times. And the same is true for the housing market, childcare, you know, that individual, that personal finance podcast that was, you know, mocking 25K, but like that's what it costs.
That's on the cheap end too.
Like when we've started to work towards $10 a day childcare in Canada. It's not where it needs to be yet, but we're working on.
What does
on
that mean, $10 a day?
So that the cost would max out at $10 a day.
So the government would subsidize the rest?
Yes.
Oh my God, that is so smart.
Absolutely. I mean, in some.
Working women is such a boom to any country's economy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But before that was implemented is when I had my son, and I was calculating it would cost six figures for him to get from zero to grade one. And that's with me taking a year off.
So is it now $10 a day? Like, do you actually have that in Canada?
We're working towards it. So what I mean by that is every year they're kind of subsidizing a little bit more. But the other piece of it is we also need more childcare. It has to be accessible for families. So there are areas where there's daycare deserts. And that is problematic as well. So I would say when I started sending my son to daycare, so this is before any of this happened, it was about $1,600 a month.
Canadian dollars.
Yeah, which is like not.
Is that like $1,100 US dollars?
Yeah, the exchange rate is really bad right now.
Okay.
So
that's still a lot.
Yeah, but now we're paying about $400 a month.
What?
So obviously it's gone down a little bit as he's gotten older because there's different ratios.
Still,
it's really impactful. So we are trying to get to, and I'm guessing it'll be in the next year or two, maxing out at, what is that? Like there's a 20 to 25 days in a month that a child goes to daycare. So $200 to $250 a month for families, which is huge if you compare it to $1,600 to probably closer to $2,000 in some major cities.
I know for a fact that boomers or people in that generation don't understand the financial differences because I was just debating this in my church council. I'm on the council of my church. And with the exception of me and two others, everyone else is in the boomer generation.
Yeah.
And they were trying to increase, and they succeeded, unfortunately, by one vote. But they succeeded increasing our stewardship by $100. And the rebuttal, like, you know, I was trying to say, like, hey, if they're 18 or 30, it needs to be, like, $100, not $600.
Yeah.
And their rebuttals were like, well, I see people coming here with BMWs. And I'm like, I don't have a BMW. And I'm, like, almost 40, you know. Or one guy said, my son's girlfriend is 27 and makes $250,000 a year. Therefore, they can afford $600. I'm like, is your son's girlfriend Greek? Is she in this church? Like, is she paying stewardship? Like, these are such weird outliers that you're using as rebuttal. And when I tried to explain to them, like, the average, and where I live, in the county that I live in, the average daycare cost is $1,650 a month.
That's a mortgage payment.
What mortgage payment? The average mortgage payment in my town is $3,500 a month.
For sure. I'm thinking like a bi-weekly mortgage payment. Like
right.
I pay my mortgage twice a month. So that's like.
Right.
a bi-weekly
and I was
mortgage
just
payment.
Like, I'm like, maybe I was a mortgage payment for my parents 30 years ago, but that's not.
Yeah.
And then I said to them, like, and you know, adding to the fact that, like, you know, there's a lot of people here, and not just me, like, not the council, but like people like me and my friends, where we're caring for our parents.
Yeah.
Right? Like, elderly care has its own expense of thousands of dollars a year.
And that's if they go to like a home, you're paying thousands of dollars a month. And then if they're living with you or you're helping with their care, not only is it financial costs, you might be taking time off from work to take them to appointments because they can't drive or, you know, going.
You don't know this about me, but I live with a disabled parent.
Okay.
So I know, like, yes. I talk about this all the time. I'm like, elderly care is a
more
crisis
unpaid care work.
Yeah, it's more unpaid care work for women, but it's also like, it's like, this is a crisis in this country, and I feel like very strong about it. And to hear people like that financial advisor who has a podcast that like, well, why can't you have your parents watch your kids? And I'm like, well, my parents had me not at 20 years old. They had me at 30 years old. And that generation, look, I'm very blessed that I have a father who like helps me with my kids after school. Like, I feel so grateful to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm also like an outlier. Right.
Yep.
There's a lot of parents that are millennials where their parents, like my parents, right? Like their parents would drop them off at their parents' house. So like they had their parents raise their young kids.
But a lot of boomers are still working.
Yes.
Like I can't call my parents if my kid is sick. They live 3 hours away because they have work.
Right.
Like they can't come. They have to work.
Right.
Because they're also still paying their bills.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
And it's like, I was trying to say this to someone the other day. They're like, I remember we've been looking to buy a house for years. We've lost a lot. Even when we were the highest bid, we would lose the house because we didn't waive inspection. So they would take the person below us. And I remember one person saying to both me and my husband, next time you go for a house, just waive inspection. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's really scary for me to waive inspection. And
well, yeah, because
I don't...
that could end up costing like hundreds of thousands of dollars if something major is wrong.
You could lose your house.
Yeah.
You know, so I was just like, I can't, this is not, we are not having the same conversation here.
No, we're on completely different.
Like you bought your, like, you know, it's like, I love asking people who bought a house in 2019, could you afford your house if it was sold to you right now? And everyone's like, no.
I love asking people to talk to their grandparent and if they're still living and say, which did you pay more for, your first house or your last car? And it's always
the last car
because housing was cheap, cheap, cheap. And you know, I do talk about this in the book as well. How the baby boomers and the silent generation built wealth is very different than the circumstances we are faced with as Gen X, millennials. And
Janine, my parents moved to this country in 1988. My dad does not even have a high school education. Okay. He was, my grandparents took him out of school because he was the youngest of 9 kids. He needed to go work. They took him out of school at the age of 12.
Oh, wow.
Okay. He started his own business. All right. Okay. You know, my dad's a very honest person, but he was also a mechanic, and you can't have these two, you can't have that profession and that integrity. It sucks.
Fair.
So whatever. And then my mom, you know, she has a bachelor's degree in psychology, and she was an operations manager, right? Like, my parents are the American dream, let's say, right? But they moved to this country in 1988. They had their 20% down payment on a split level home in Central Jersey in 2 years.
I wish.
How is it that I make more than my parents combined?
Yeah.
And I have 20% to put down, but I can't afford any mortgage. Like, I just, it doesn't, I don't want to be house poor.
No, it's miserable if you're house poor.
Like, I'm literally, my husband and I are like, we can afford without being house poor $4,500 a month. That's what we're willing to put down. But every mortgage that we see, because of the interest rates or like availability, it's like the mortgage is always like $5,500, $6,200, $7,000. And also you hear, like, I see this one house the other day in my neighborhood, and it was for sale before the pandemic in 2019 or 2018 for like $250,000. Right now it's for sale for $600,000.
Oh my God.
Right? But that house being sold for $600,000 has the problems of a $250,000 house. Like, it still needs a new roof.
Yeah.
It probably needs new HVAC. Like, there's all these other things that you have to like consider. I'm like, how am I supposed to afford this house? And then you have people in my own community who are like, who literally said to me when I complained about like stewardship going up $100, I swear to God, he looked me in my face and said, just go to Starbucks one time less a week.
Oh, okay. I didn't know it was that easy.
And it's funny because I went home.
Like, I didn't think of that, actually.
I went home and I told my dad the conversation. I go, you know, this is what he said. And my dad, who's living it with me, right? He's experiencing the cost and all that stuff. He like empathizes. He got really angry.
Good.
Like, he was like, how dare he speak to you like that? And I'm like, I don't know. He hates me. So I don't pay attention to people who hate me.
But,
I don't pay
my bills. You know, that's a very patronizing comment.
That is the most patronizing shit ever, because it's the same people who are like, stop eating avocado toast. And I'm like, how is this?
And it's the media, right? Like,
which, by the way, I can afford the stewardship increase. That's not, but like,
that's not the point.
That's not the point, right? I'm on the council to represent other people. I got voted in by a specific, by parents.
Yeah.
I got voted in by parents.
And you're trying to represent them.
Yeah. My parents have other expenses that you're not accounting for here. So it was just a very weird. How about like, what do you feel like are the economic challenges that women face compared to men currently right now?
I think there's some women that are trying to, you know, purchase homes by themselves, and that can be really challenging because you only have one income to qualify on. And we just talked about how insane that is. I think they're faced with just challenges in terms of paying off debt. Oftentimes we know that women have more debt coming out of school. But then I think also when we look at access to credit, women make less. So they're ultimately using kind of more of the credit that they qualify for, which hurts their credit score. Yeah. And so then what happens when you have a lower credit score? Well, your interest rate is higher. So it's all these little
vicious cycles. It's little vicious cycles
that just pick away at women's ability to earn wealth. And I'm sick of it. So I'm talking about it.
I love that. So with that said, I want to end this on telling people a little bit more about you. You created the Wealth Building Academy.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So that's my company, and it's a financial literacy education platform. And what that means is I run online courses to teach women how to invest. There's a community aspect of it. So it's all kind of go at your own pace. I teach you how to invest in the stock market, but I'm also there, you know, for Q&As. People can ask questions in the community, creating that safe space for women to ask those questions, for women to build their wealth, for other women to cheer them on that they hit a six-figure portfolio.
Right.
So that is a big piece of it. And I also run masterminds for women to be, again, in community, not necessarily focused on investing, but have the ability to ask questions, to bounce things off of other women that can talk about money, because it is a taboo subject. Right. We're told not to talk about it. It's greedy, it's crass, it's all of those things. So my mission is really to close the wealth gap before I leave this earth. I don't know if it will happen, but
hey,
I'm trying.
I love it. Shoot for the stars, and you know, you're doing it. Janine, it was incredible having you on here. I feel like we've learned a lot. I feel like my listeners and my viewers, if you're watching this on YouTube, are going to gain so much from this conversation, but also that there's a resource for them to become more, as you called it, financial literate.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah. And it was so fun chatting with you. I feel like we could have kept going.
Oh, yeah. We absolutely could have kept going. Janine, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm all over the internet, LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, at Janine Rogan. My company is thewealthbuildingacademy.com, and you can find the book at pinktaxbook.com.
Excellent. And I'm going to include all of that in the show notes. Janine, thanks again for coming to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, listener, for watching and listening to this episode. If you gained insight, I want you to go onto the YouTube channel. I want you to tell me in the comments. If you enjoyed listening to this, tell your friends, like, subscribe, all that stuff. Help me with the algorithm gods. Anyway, you know how it goes. Be lovable, but more importantly, be likable. See you next week.